to the Mishnah on Daf Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. And again, we're talking about different types of healing and going out on Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah with different things that heal. And as we said in the last year, a lot of these things are just very foreign to us, but Yotzim Bebeitzas HaChargol. Chargol is a type of a species of Chagav, of a locust, that's mentioned in Vayikra Yud Aleph. And the Gemara in Chulin establishes that you're allowed to eat this particular insect. And I don't know if there are any old-time Yemenites who are still eating chargol today. I don't know if they could identify it. And the egg of a chargol, is very therapeutic, as we'll see why or how. Ubishen shual, and you carry in on Rishus Rabim a fox's tooth. Vemasmer min hatsoluv, when they put someone to death who was condemned, and they hung his corpse up after the execution. Apparently, they would keep his body up on the gallows, and there was a nail that was used to secure the corpse, and that nail has some sort of therapeutic healing power to it. And all this you're allowed to carry in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. Basically, it's like a kamiya, the amulet that we spoke about back on Daf Nun Aleph, Daf Samach Aleph, and it's considered like a tachshit rather than a masa. Chachomim osrim af bechol. Chachomim say that these are darkei amori, mishum darkei amori. These are prohibited. It's like a sorcery, like a magic that's part of perhaps avodah zarah culture, and we're not allowed to use these methods even during the weekday. Forget about Shabbos. And it comes under the prohibition, says Rashi, of B'chukoseyem lo se lechu, and under the what the Torah prescribes, lo sasu kimaseyem. Rashi here also mentions nichush, which comes under the prohibition of lo senachashu in Parshas Kedoshim. And the Rashash is wondering why no one quotes that pasuk. It should have been an appropriate quote over here. So let's immediately take a look at the Gemara. Yotzim v'beitzas hachargol di'avdi l'shichla. This is this locust's egg that hangs from one's ear is very helpful for an earache. Okay, this is not modern scientific medicine, but ubishen shel shual, and the tooth of a fox, the avdi lishinsa. This will help you for someone who has problems falling asleep. The chayalaman denayim, and the tooth of a live fox, again, if you can only get hold of one, is good for someone who's very drowsy to keep him awake. So it's very interesting. If the fox is already dead, then it can wake you up. And if the fox is alive, Dafka, it can wake you up. Well, let me just go over this one more time. If it's a dead fox, then it'll help you go to sleep. And if it's a live fox, it'll help you wake up. I mean, that makes sense. The Misa Leman Denoyon. Fine. That of a dead fox can be used to put someone to sleep, as we said before. V'masmir menat soluv. So we're talking about the nail on the gallows from someone who's hanged. The avdi lezirpa. You go out with this nail on Shabbos. It's used to heal the swelling of a wound. And the Meiri says specifically swelling caused by a sword wound. Now, it's a bit unusual here because a wound is caused by iron, and that causes inflammation, and he's using a nail, which is also iron, to relieve that which he's suffering from iron. Now, there's a Rashba here, which is quoted in the footnote, and he makes a chiluk between the different capabilities of a fox's tooth and a gallows nail. In a fox's tooth, we're talking about a natural inborn power, a medicinal power. In the case of the gallows, the power is because it was used in that way, to nail up the corpse. The Mishnah says, Mishum refuah, for the purpose of healing. Divrei Rabbi Meir, and the Chazal, the Chachomim, prohibited even during the week because of Darkei Amori. Abai v'rov ni'amr shavayu, kol dovar sheyesh bo mishum refuah, ein bo mishum Darkei ha'amori. If something has therapeutic value, and it's not being done because of we're imitating the Amorim, then it's mutter. And it's not called Darkei Amori. Which means that both Abai v'Rav accepted the opinion of Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah. That actions that come under Darkei Amori, the Amorite ways, are done in order to imitate the Gentiles, different superstitions that we blindly follow. But if these practices are therapeutic in value, then clearly no one's motivated to practice them to imitate the Goyim. Because even if the Goyim weren't involved, as long as these are beneficial, and he wants to derive the benefit, he's permitted to perform these acts. So the Gemara asks the Kasha, Ha'ein bo mishum refuah, yesh bo mishum darchei ha'amori. If these kinds of practices would not have any benefit therapeutically, then it would come under darchei ha'amori. For example, if you drink various potions, or you bandage wounds with certain specific materials, it's evident that these are therapeutic. Now, it's very interesting that when Rashi gives an example of a practice that is devoid of therapeutic value, he mentions incantation, kind of lachash, you know, when you recite certain proclamations and declarations. And those would be prohibited by Abai v'Rava. However, the Rosh rejects Rashi based on the previous sugi that we had, and there were many incantations that were defined and recommended as effective, and some would even mention by Abai himself. Therefore, the Rosh explains that Rashi refers to these kinds of lachashim, these incantations, that have no clear healing properties. And they're not evident, it's not evident to anybody that they're therapeutic in value. These are prohibited under Darkei Amori. However, the lachashim that are mentioned earlier in yesterday's sugya, those were well known to be healing, and therefore they are permissible. Now, according to Abai v'Rava, it could very well be that Rabbi Meir, whose opinion they accept, would only classify something as Darkei Amori if it had some sort of smell, reach of Avodah Zarah. And none of the practices that we have, which again are therapeutic, have the element of Avodah Zarah in them. So there's no Darkei Amori. But the Meiri says in general that these various lachashim that are mentioned in our sugya and even recommended in our sugya are totally ineffective, but they have a psychological benefit, as a placebo kind of thing, because if people believe that they work, that they were effective, then that would help those who are ill. The Rambam, at the end of Hilchas Akum, and he repeats something very similar in his Mor Nevuchim, is that all these incantations, these lachashim, these charms, are entirely meaningless and they have no substance. And only fools would believe in them. Now, sometimes they're prohibited because they can lead to sorcery, to witchcraft. And eventually, from witchcraft, you just skip and hop to get to idol worship. But the only practices which are permitted are those who have been, that have been proven scientifically, that can be explained according to the natural law of the universe. Anything beyond that is charms, incantations, they're all without substance. And once you give them credence, that could lead to sorcery and ultimately to Avodah Zarah. So for example, the gallows nail in our Mishnah was believed during the period of the Gemara to have some sort of validity, some sort of efficacy based on natural law. Very strange. I mean, you wonder where and how a gallows nail would have any... just take a nail if it has some sort of efficacy. The Rashba says that there are certain contradictions in what the Rambam writes, and many of the cures that the Gemara promises us are effective cannot be explained based on nature. And therefore, according to the Rashba, any practice that can be proven has a track record to be effective, whether it's natural or supernatural, if it's performed with the recognition that all healing is in the hands of God, then it's permissible. Practices that have no therapeutic value, that would be prohibited. Okay, let's see what we're up to. Varsanya, let's read this brisa, because we were medayik that according to Abaye and Rava, if there's no refuah, then it falls under Darkei Amorim. It's Asur. Ilan Shemashir Perosov. If, let's say, you own a tree, and the tree sheds its fruit early, Meshir Perosov, it's overly active, so to speak, is Sokro Besikra Vitono Bavonim. He's going to dye it with red dye, and he's going to put rocks on its branches, and these are Darchei Amori. And yet, to our surprise, the Brisa says that this is what we do. We can perhaps justify the permissibility of burning the tree's branches with rocks, which means that chele is the power, the vitality, should be slowed down, should be sapped, should be inhibited. So we want to inhibit the vitality of this tree, because the tree is producing too early. The fruits are coming out too early, and the fruits are there falling off the tree too early. So I can understand Torno Bavon, so that the tree is no longer as strong as it was, and slowing down its energy force, it will slow down its producing of the fruits. Elasokro besikra, my refuah ka'ovit. Well, what kind of food do you get about dyeing something with red, sikro is red dye. Well, what healing does it have? Absolutely none. And yet it's permissible. So we see that one is permitted to perform a practice which is an Amorite practice that has no therapeutic value. And we just finished saying that that in the case of Sokro Besikra, it has some sort of a medicinal value. Well, not Sokro Besikra, just one second, what was the first case? Of Tono Bavonet. Well, what's the point of dyeing it red? So how can we permit it? L'chor, if it's not therapeutic, it should come under Darche Amori. The more answer is, Ki hecha del chazi inish inshi v'livu ale rachmin. The tree is dyed red to make a public statement. And we're hoping that people will see that the owner of this tree is really lost. And they'll pray that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should show mercy upon this this person and his tree. Kedisanya, like we learned in the Braisa, V'tamei tamei yikra, which means that a Metzora who has a skin blemish, is the Torah saying that an individual must warn others of his contamination. Tell them to distance themselves. Let's mention that the purpose of the red dye, what healing does it have? It really has no healing process. So the Gemara answers, Ki hechi d'lechazia inish v'libo alei rachmin. This is a way of attention, calling attention, public attention, to the fact that he's in a situation of misfortune, he has a tzara, and that people will pray on his behalf. Where do we find such a thing? And the perhaps the precedent for this is the case of Metzora, where the Torah says, Kidasani v'tomei tomei yikra, that he has to call out, I am tomei and I am tomei. And this is going on during his period of Hezger, when he's contaminated and he's notifying others that he's a tomei, that he should distance himself from him. If the Torah just wanted to teach us that I am Tummy means to notify the public, then why say it twice? Why not just say it once? And the answer is, Tzarech lo'odia tzara l'rabim. It's a way of informing the public that he's a bitzar, and therefore Rabbi Yivak Shol Rachim. So that the masses of people will pray for him. So here also, the function of the red dye is not as a refuah per se, but rather to call his situation is plight to the attention of the public, and so on, so that the people will pray on his behalf. I just wanted to mention one thing about the Metzora. Yeah, that he wants people to beg for mercy on his behalf. Fine. Omar Avino. Avina says, Keman talinan kuvse bedikla. How do we allow this practice, which we call hanging a bunch of dates upon a palm tree, a date tree, that's shedding its fruit early? Ki haitana, this reflects the sheet of a Tana, who says that this brisa, that if someone is in a state of misfortune, he should tell others so they'll pray for him. And we hang dates upon an unhealthy palm tree to alert others that their prayers are needed. Now here is a long braisa. So the Gemara is going to go into some detail about a number of acts that are prohibited because they are darkei amori. Tani tana Perek Amori Kame Rav Chiya Bar Avin. So they quote now a braisa that teaches dinim that deal with Darche Emori. And these are two chapters in the Tosefta to Masechta Shabbos, chapters number Shiva of Shmona, 7 and 8 deal with Amorite practices. Omale, Rav Chiya said to him, Ku ispu mishum darke amor lubar mihani. That when you're teaching this chapter of the Tosefta, don't say that any of the practices here are permissible. Make sure to teach that all these practices enumerated are prohibited because of the imitation of the Amorim, except for two that I will mention to you. So Rav Chiya Bar Huna will now tell the person who's in charge of teaching these prices which two practices are permitted. He says, Mishi Yeshlo Etzem Begrono. He has a bone that's stuck in his throat. Mevi Mi Oso Amin. He should bring another bone of that sort. Umeniach Le Al Kodkodo. And he should place it on the top of his skull. Velemach, and he declare, Chad Chad Nochiz Bola. One by one go down and be swallowed. Bola Nochis Chad Chad, be swallowed and go down one by one. Ein bo mishum darche ha'amori. That's number one. Number two, le'idra le'mahachi. Let's say a person has a fishbone stuck in his throat. He should say, nin atzta v'machat, you're embedded like a needle. Nin alta kitris, you're locked up like a shutter. Shoya, shoya, go down, go down. And these two practices were permissible. Then it's not considered darche hamori. Now we'll turn to Samach Zayin Amid Beis. So Rav Chiya Bar Huna now tells us that all the rest of the practices that are darche hamori are all prohibited. And this is a partial list. The full list appears in the those two chapters in the Tosefta. HaOmer, if a person says, Gad Gidi. Now this has to do with the astrology, and he thinks that by incanting these various lachashim, he's going to make sure he's going to somehow activate that sign, which is his, that'll favor him. So he says, may my constellation, which is called Gadi, show me good fortune. V'sanuk lo ajbi uvushvi. And may it not be wearied neither by day nor by night. Is Yeshbo Mishum Darche Hamori. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Gad Eino El Loshen Avodah Zarah, that the word God, which we said referred to one of the mazolos, is a reference to idol worship, Shenemar, because it says in the Pasuk in Yeshaya that God was an idol, and Shenemar ha'orchim la'gad shulchan. They set a table for God, for this God. God was an idol, and it was named for one of the constellations. So this incantation is more than just a darche amori. It's mamish a violation of idol worship. The Baisa gives another proscribed practice, who bishma v'hi bishmo. He, a husband, is called by night with her, meaning his wife's name. She is called with his name. And this is all some sort of divination, some sort of sorcery. Yesh bo mishum darche hamori. Dunu Dani, another Lachash. May my barrels of wine be strengthened. Yesh bo mishum darche amori. Rav Yehuda omer, ein don el loshen avodah zarah. This is worse than darche amori. It's mamash avodah zarah. Shenemar quotes a pasuk in Tanakh in Amos. Hanish boim bi ashmas shomron vi omru chai elohecha don. Those who swear by the iniquity of Samaria or say by the life of your God Don. And the iniquity of Samaria refers to the golden calf that was placed by Yerovam ben Nevat, who was the first of the of those kings of the Aseres HaShvatim, and he put it in Basel. And your god Dan refers to the golden calf that he placed in the portion of Dan. And therefore, it's a Lashon of Avodah Zarah. Ha'omer li Orev, he says to a raven, Tzrach, croak. Uli Arvasa, to a female raven, Shriki, shriek. Vahachzir li znovech letova, and turn your tail to me for good fortune. That's also Darkei Amori. And ravens were considered by the Amorim to be bearers of evil tidings. So if he hears a raven croak, he incants thus in order that it would be better for him, to augur for him well. Ha'omer shachatu tarnagol, Zeshekora Orvis, if one says, slaughter the rooster that croaked like a raven, Vitanagola Shekora Gavris, or this hen that crowed like a rooster, Yeshbo Mishum Darche Amori. And again, these kind of things would strike fear into the hearts of the Amoriu, because they're not natural. So they would say, therefore, slaughter those birds that behave in this unnatural way. Now, in the Shulchan Aruch, you'll find that it's forbidden to slaughter a bird for these reasons. However, the Beis Yosef says that people customarily do actually slaughter hens that crow like roosters. And the basis for this minog is Rav Yehuda Chassid. In his tzava, he left a last will and testament for his offspring to follow this practice. So the Beis Yosef explains that those who follow such a practice rely upon the reading of the Ramach, who has a different girsa in our Gemara, in which it's stated that these practices are not prohibited as an Amorite practice, the exact opposite of our girsa, and therefore these practices are permitted. If you have that reading, then Rav Chiya bar Huna was differentiating between the practice listed in our Gemara and the rest of the practices enumerated in the Tosefta. These that he's enumerating are permitted. And in the Tosefta, those are enumerated that are prohibited. Rashi, however, has our Girsa, and all that we're reading here is prohibited. The Ramban Shulchan Aruch writes that the reason for those who have this custom to slaughter such hens, and they permit doing so, is because they don't recite the Lachash. They don't say, well, we're slaughtering this hen because of this reason or that reason. They simply slaughter the hen. And such a shechita is mutter. The Bi'ur Agra argues against the Ramban. The Taz disagrees with the Ramban. And the Taz agrees with Ramah, and he wants to extend the Ramah's reasoning to all Darche Amori. In other words, whatever you do to imitate the Amorim, as listed here, but you don't mention or recite those lachashim, that should be mutter. However, the Shilta Giborim on the Rif and Avodah Zorah says it's forbidden all these superstitious acts if he's performing them in accordance with a superstition. But if he simply performs the act and he doesn't say that I'm doing it for that reason, then it's mutter. Just like, for example, if the world thinks that such an action is dangerous and you want to avoid such an action, so then as long as you don't say that you're declaring it, that you're doing it because of this, that, or the other thing, it's mutter. So this whole sugya halacha has to be taken under advisement, really has to be studied carefully. Another case of Darkei Mori, Eshtevi Osir, Eshtevi Osir, I'll drink and leave over. And he hopes that that somehow infuses his cup with a blessing. So a small measure of the liquid in his cup will somehow satiate his thirst. That's Darkei Mori. If you say to someone else, you should drink and leave over, that's just a bracha, that's okay. Amavakas beitzim bakosel mipnei hafrochim. He breaks eggshells upon a wall before fledglings so that they will not die. So he shatters eggshells and the fledglings will emerge from the eggshells. He sets them onto a wall so they won't die. Yesh bo mishum darkei mori. Megis bifnei efrochim, if he stirs, I don't know exactly what he's stirring, before fledglings so that they wouldn't die, yesh bo mishum darkei mori. Hamraketes, he dances before the fledglings. Vamone shivim vi echad efrochim, he counts 71 fledglings, bishvil shlo yamusu, so they shouldn't die. That's also a practice that's taken from the Amorim. Hamrakedes la kutach. A woman dances before kutach so that its flavor will be strong. Kutach, we've discussed many times, is kind of a dip that they used, sort of like a yogurt made with breadcrumbs. And well, these are superstitions in cooking practices. That's why the Gemara addresses the women. So somebody dances before his kutach, she dances. Wamshatekes ladoshim. She tells people who are standing around, be silent. When she puts the adoshim, the lentils, into a pot. Vamitzavachas lagrisim. She tells people to shout out in front of a pot of beans. All these are yesh bo mishum darkei mori. Hamashtenes bifnei kedei rosa b'shvil shetispashel mehera. A woman urinates before her cook pot so that the food will cook quickly. That's also darkei mori. Avol nosnim kesam sheltus v'shivrei zchuchis b'kedeira b'shvil shetispashel mehera. It's permissible to place a splinter of mulberry wood or glass fragments into a cook pot so that the food will cook quickly. That's not a superstition, but that's actually a scientific method of speeding up the cooking time. Because mulberry wood is sharp as vinegar and speeds up the cooking process. I have no clue, if anybody knows, why glass fragments are going to speed up the cooking process. Seems pretty dangerous. Chachomim osrim b'shivrei zchuchus mnei sakana. Chachomim indeed were worried about the sakana of broken glass. Now, once the Gemara mentions this practice of putting things into the crock pot, into the cook pot, so the Gemara now goes off a little bit on a tangent. Tana Rabbanan, Nosnim bul shel melach l'soch haner b'shvil shetoyer v'sadlik. So it's mutter to put a fistful of salt into a lamp so that it'll burn brightly. This is not magic. This is actually a scientific method of increasing the light. V'nosnim tit v'charsis tachas haner b'shvil shetamtin v'sadlik. He's allowed to place clay or mud underneath a lamp so that it will burn slowly. In other words, slowing down the process of burning. This is not magic. This is scientific. Because salt thins oil and allows it to be drawn more easily after the wick, so it'll burn more brightly. Mud and clay cool the oil, causing it to be drawn more slowly after the wick, and it'll burn for a longer period of time. That's how Rashi learns it. This brisa actually is taught in the Tosefta with regard to the Shabbos Ner. The Shabbos Ner, the lamp of Shabbos, has to be lit with fuel that will be drawn easily by a wick, back in Perek B'Memadlikin. So it'll light and burn brightly and will not flicker. Since salt causes the oil to be drawn more readily after the wick, it is proper to place it in the Shabbos lamp before Shabbos. Omar Rav Zutra, Haiman de Michse Shraga de Mishcha, a person who needlessly covers an oil lamp, Umagali Nafta, or alternatively uncovers a Nafta lamp, in order to cause it to burn more quickly, Ka'avar Mishum Baltashchis. He's destroying something useful, because he's causing fuel to be wasted. Now this has to do with the parsha of Milchama in Dvarim Perek Chaf, where the Torah says that he put a siege on a city for many days. You're not allowed to destroy the trees. And destroying the trees, although this prohibition applies all times, any useful article, you're not allowed to destroy, lav dafka a tree, and lav dafka during Shas Milchama. Rav Zutra therefore says that if one wastes fuel, he violates this Isur of Baltashchis. If he destroys an article merely for the sake of destruction, if he has some useful purpose, let's say he burns furniture because there's no other firewood, that's mutter. Chamra v'chai l'fum rabbanon. Somebody says wine and life to the mouths of the rabbis. Ein bo mishum darkei amore. This is just a bracha. And the Minchas Bikurim, which is the super commentary on the Tosefta, says that you're permitted to utter any customary toast of to life over a beverage, and that's called L'chaim. Maisa Rabbi Akiva Shasa Mishta L'Bino. Rabbi Akiva prepared a mishta, a feast, and a banquet for his son. V'alkol kos v'kos shehevi. Every cup that he brought, Omar, he declared, Chamra v'chaye l'fum rabbona. U'lefum talmideim, life and wine to the mouths of the rabbis and the mouths of their students. And if Rabbi Akiva indeed gave this kind of a toast, then obviously it's mutter. Hadron Alecha Bameh Isha Yotzeis, and Kal Gadol Amru B'Shabbos, Kal Shochech Iker Shabbos, V'yosim Lachos Har B'Shabbos Har Be'inu Chai V'Lechatos Achas. So Mirz Hashem will continue with the seventh parak. The sixth parak we managed to navigate through well until the last part of the parak, and I apologize because this last part of the perek with various kinds of therapeutic customs that are so foreign to us. I found myself just trying to get through this. I I don't know if anyone alive today can somehow analyze these kinds of practices that were apparently prevalent back in the day. In any event, we should be zocher to continue in Masechta Shabbos and hopefully finish the Masechta, they go on to Masechta Erevin. That's futuristic.